As of the first of this month, the first of November, I've been doing what I'm about to do for 41 years on what we sometimes call a full-time basis. I left secular work behind in November of 1978 and started preaching full-time and have been doing that ever since. I am not in the audience the preacher who has preached the longest or the most. Bob Buchanan is way older than me, so he's been doing this longer than I have. But 41 years does give me a perspective. It does give me a level of experience that sets me apart, I think, from some. And I try to appreciate that and respect that. Those of us who preach understand and recognize that we are charged to preach the whole counsel of God. But I learned very early in preaching that there is a part of the counsel of God that is very hard to preach. And that is talking about what the Bible says about preachers. There is a fairly significant amount of teaching in the New Testament about men who are called preachers. But it is hard to mount the pulpit and talk about that without sounding self-serving. And so I don't know about any other preacher's experience, but in my experience personally, I pretty much just shied away. And especially when I was younger, talking about preachers. But it needs to be preached. It needs to be talked about. We need to know what the New Testament teaches about the role of preachers and the work of preachers. The hardest part of the lesson this week was finding graphics that depicted Bob and I, respectively. There are different ways to approach the work of preaching. I learned when I first started preaching that N.B. Hardiman, who taught generations of preachers, and we know many of them, and respect and hold in very high esteem many of the men who were taught by N.B. Hardiman, but when young men enrolled at Freed Hardeman College back then, it was a junior college in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and they sat at the feet of Brother Hardiman and wanted to learn how to be preachers, wanted to be trained by him to preach. One of the things that they were assigned to do at the very beginning of their studies was they had to read 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus every week. And they were expected at some point fairly early on to have memorized 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus. And we might approach a study of preachers that way. And it would be a profitable study, but it would take a lot more than just the time that I'm going to allot to it tonight. So what I want to do is I want to use the passage that we just read together in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 to talk a little bit about the role that preachers play in the work that they do in local churches, the responsibilities that preachers have in the work that they do in local churches. And I think this is important because I think there are two extremes among us. Just maybe it would be better to say two extremes among people when it comes to preachers. Either holding the preacher in very high esteem, really in higher esteem than they deserve. And that seems, by the way, that seems to be the problem with which Paul is dealing in this text. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, going all the way back to 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we'll talk about that here in just a minute. But the other extreme is that sometimes in the minds of some people and in the minds of some brethren, preachers are the bad guy. Preachers are the villain. So I ran across this. And I really think, and by the way, no intent that this depicts anybody who's ever stood in this pulpit and preached. You draw those conclusions yourself. I leave that for you. But I have, in my experience, in my personal experience, some people see the preacher as the bad guy. And he's the guy who's always raising his voice, and he's the guy who's always telling us what we're doing that's wrong. And he's always shouting at us, and he always seems to be angry, and there may very well be preachers whose pulpit presence is not exactly what it ought to be. But really, in my experience, I think that is an extreme, and I don't know that I have ever known a preacher who would fit that caricature of mounting the pulpit with the intention of trying to express his anger, to try to put people in their place. But that is the perception that some people have about preachers. So what does Paul say in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 about preachers? And again, remember, this seems to have been an issue in the city of Corinth and the church in the city of Corinth. So we'll start out with verses 1 and 2. And this is the English Standard, which James used to read that passage together with us a few minutes ago. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 1, this is how one should regard us. And then Paul uses two terms to describe, and the us there is talking about preachers, men like the apostles, men like Paul, and Paul's companions like Timothy and Silas and others, men who were preaching and teaching the gospel. This is how one should regard us, Paul says. And he uses two words. And that first word in the English Standard Version is the word servant. You are to regard us as servants, Paul says. The New American Standard renders the word as minister. The word servant, I think, probably comes a little bit closer to catching the meaning of the term. The New American Standard Exhaustive Concordance defines the word that is translated servant or minister as an underling, a servant, an attendant, a helper, and then minister. And that word tells us several things about preachers and the work that they do in local churches. First of all, preachers are not over local churches. We understand and recognize and appreciate, I think, that that is a misconception and a problem in the denominational world. But I suggest to you tonight, and I'm confident that this is so because I've seen it, that there are places where brethren view the preacher in exactly that way, that the preacher is over the local church. And so if anything gets done, it is the preacher who does it. Generally, that is in the absence of elders in the local church. But Paul says you should regard us rather than regarding us as over the local church. And remember, he's speaking not just as a preacher, but he's speaking even as an apostle. You should not regard us as over the local church. We are not clergy, if we can use that word, which preachers, again, in the denominational world are often called, not ex officio elders, not standing in the place of elders. And preachers are not official interpreters of the Bible for the group. That's part of the work of preaching. Part of the responsibility is to try to do in the book of Ezra when the law was read before the people. Ezra is standing on a pulpit of wood. That must have been something similar to what I'm standing on. And perhaps about the same height or maybe a little bit higher. And he's reading from the book. I think clearly he's reading from the book of Deuteronomy. And the text tells us that while Ezra was reading, the Levites were circulating around through the crowd. And what were they doing? Well, they weren't waking people up. The people were standing up. They were explaining to them the things that were being read. That's part of the work of preaching. And so the idea of underling or servant, this is how one should regard us as servants of the local church. It is interesting. In his condemnation of the Pharisees, when Jesus reaches finally the end of the line with the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23, one of the things he says to them is in Matthew chapter 23 and verse 11, the greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, verse 12, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. So when we think about the work of preachers in the local church, the responsibility of preachers, the role of preachers in the local church. How should we view preachers in the local church? We should view them as servants of the local church. And by the way, the preacher should view himself in exactly that same way. The second word that he uses to describe the work of preachers in the local church is the word steward. We are servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Thayer defines a steward as a manager, a caretaker, an overseer of households or household affairs. In other words, the steward is the one who stepped in and tried to make certain that the things that belong to the homeowner, the things that belong to the one who was the actual owner of the household, that those things were taken care of. The church is the house of God. And the local church is a manifestation of that on a local level. And one of the things that preachers do is they have the responsibility to very carefully and very faithfully tend those things for the one who owns them, for the one who possesses them. Notice what he says in verse 2. What is the requirement of a steward? And before I read verse 2, and you're reading it already, but before I read verse 2 and make the comments that I want to make, what is it that people look for when they're looking for a preacher? I'm involved in, from two different perspectives, I'm involved in two different situations right now. I'm in contact with a church in another state who's trying to find a preacher. I'm trying to help them to identify men who might be looking to move. And I'm also in contact with a very dear friend of mine who is a preacher who is in a situation where he very much needs to leave where he is and go somewhere else. I'm trying to, the ideal thing would be to put those two, to put those two together, but I don't think it's going to work. And one of the reasons I don't think it's going to work is because this group of people, these elders with whom I am in communication, and one of the things we are communicating about, and one of the things that we've talked about is their expectation of a preacher. So they want somebody who's young, and my friend is, well, he's my age. They want someone with children who are perfectly faithful and obedient and kind and polite and quiet. You know, their expectations, what they're looking for. And as a matter of fact, in a situation like that, unless we can help those elders to correct their thinking about it, I would be hesitant to even recommend somebody I know, especially who goes into a situation like that. But a lot of times when local churches are looking for preachers, they're looking for an eloquent speaker. They're looking for someone who's just the right age, whatever that age is that they think it happens to be, someone with a big voice. They're looking for someone with 30 years of experience, but he's only 30 years old. I remember when I was 29 years old, and an older gospel preacher pulled me aside and said, Gary, an amazing thing is about to happen to you. And I, of course, I was anxious to know what. He said, you are about to age 10 years. Well, I was just a week or so away from my 30th birthday. I had no idea what he was talking about, but I learned that in brethren's minds, there is a 10-year difference between a 29-year-old preacher. He's in his 20s. And a 30-year-old preacher, he's in his 30s. Again, what are the things we're looking for when we're looking for a preacher? Look at what Paul says. He said, first of all, you should regard us as servants. There's nothing special about us. We are servants. But we are also stewards of the mysteries of God. And moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found eloquent, that they be found young, that they be found married, that they be found with the right number of children of the right age. No, one thing and one thing only, that they be found faithful. What is the role of a preacher in the local congregation? The role of a preacher in the congregation is to assimilate himself into the membership, among the members, and serve them in whatever way that he can, and mount the pulpit or mount the podium in a Bible class and be faithful in proclaiming and teaching God's Word. And so if we were to go to books like 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus and look at the things that the Apostle Paul instructs gospel preachers to do, he says to Titus, keep a close watch on, among other things, your teaching. Keep a close watch on the teaching. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 2, preach the word. And then Paul says about himself, not as an apostle, but as a preacher, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 27, talking to the Ephesian elders, he says to them that I did not hesitate to declare to you the whole counsel of God. I mean, that is it. That is it. What should we expect of preachers? We should expect them to be part of our local group and serving us just like every member has the obligation and the privilege of being able to serve other members. And when that preacher occupies a position like the one in which I'm standing tonight, what we demand of him is that he be a faithful steward. He's going to teach the truth. Yeah, and he's going to tell us all the truth. The truth, the whole truth. Nothing but the truth. And if he does that, listen, if he does that, that meets the qualifications, that meets the description that the inspired Apostle Paul gives of preachers, does it not? Am I missing something? What should we expect of preachers? How should we view preachers? We're looking for them to be servants. And listen, if a man comes into a local church and sits back and expects the local church to serve him in every way, we have a problem. He should be a servant, and he should be an example of serving other people. And we should expect him in his teaching to be a faithful steward of the mysteries of God. And so if you want a really simple definition of what a preacher is and what a preacher does, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2 would be the perfect place to go. But Paul doesn't stop there. Because Paul suggests to us going on that preachers stand before three great tribunals. And these three tribunals are not equal. They are all important, but they're not equal. So notice that Paul first of all says that preachers stand before the bar of public opinion. He says in chapter 4 and verse 3, "But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself." I want you to notice that Paul doesn't say, "With me it is nothing that I should be judged by you." I've actually even heard it kind of semi-quoted like that before. Well, you know, the Apostle Paul said he didn't care anything about what people think. Well, that's not what he said. But what he said is, it is a small thing with me. In other words, I take notice as a preacher, Paul says. But among these three tribunals, this is the least significant. This is the least important. And the reason is because if you are going to be a faithful steward of the mysteries of God, you're not going to be able to please everyone all the time. And there are going to be times when it doesn't matter how you say it, it doesn't matter how gentle you are in saying it, it doesn't matter how soft your tone is, if you teach the truth, you're going to make somebody angry. Somebody's going to be upset. Somebody's going to want to dispose of you, to get rid of you, to move you on and find somebody more palatable. But having said that, again, Paul doesn't say, "With me it is nothing that I should be judged by you or by any human court," but he says it's a small thing. I will tell you this, every preacher I know, and I know many, and it is one of the great blessings of my life to have been part of that fraternity of men who preach the gospel, to get to know some people that, and to get to know them very intimately in ways that I might not have known them because of the work that we shared. I have never known a gospel preacher, that is not hyperbole. I personally have never known a gospel preacher who did not have some concern about how what he said impacted or affected other people. But again, it's the small of the three. It's the smallest thing. And preachers have to be ready to accept the fact that some people are not going to accept what we say, and it's going to make them angry. And if your perception of preaching, you get in the pulpit and your perception of preaching is, "I've got to make everybody happy. I can't say anything that's going to offend or upset anybody," you are a fool. And that is not my assessment. That is Paul's assessment. Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10. And this is right after, by the way, in Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10, right after Paul had said twice, if we or an angel from heaven tells you anything other than what we told you, let him be accursed. But he says in the next verse, in verse 10, for am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? Listen to this. If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. A preacher who's trying to make people happy, who makes an effort to present the mysteries of God with the primary motive being, I don't want to make anybody angry. I don't want anybody to be upset. I don't want anybody to leave having their feelings hurt. Again, assuming that that was not the intention of the preacher, that it is the Word of God that's doing that. That person is foolish. That person, Paul says, is not even a servant of Christ. And so Paul said in verse 3, they stand before the bar of public opinion. It gets more serious in verse 4. Because Paul says that they stand before the bar of self. Or we might say conscience. Conscience. Paul says, after saying, it is a little thing what people think about me. He says, but for I am not aware of anything against myself. But I am not thereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges. I am not aware of anything against myself. You want to know something about your preachers? And I'm not just talking about Bob and I. You want to know something about your preachers? You know who their biggest critic is? Themselves. I guarantee. One of the great blessings of having a faithful companion is that when I would leave this building and we would get in the car and we would be driving home and I'm thinking, I didn't say that well. I didn't say what I wanted to say. I didn't say it in the way I wanted to say it. Is the criticism coming from the passenger seat? And I miss that. I miss that a lot. Because I still do get in the car. I will tonight. And I'll drive home and I'll go home and I'll be in that big old house by myself and I'll start thinking, was I fair in what I said? Did I say it clearly? You know, did it come across as mean? Was I that middle guy? Was I that middle guy in the graphic? Is that how it sounded? Did I overstate my case, which is a big issue with me sometimes. I get excited about things and Bob Husted taught me the word after I moved here, hyperbole. And that's all Bob, Brother Husted, that's all he has to say now after a lesson is he just has to say hyperbole and I know. Preacher's biggest critics are themselves. And every time a preacher leaves the pulpit, every time a preacher walks away from a podium in a Bible classroom, that self-examination starts. And I will tell you something, I don't know if Brother Buchanan or, you know, Brother McPherson or Brother Cook, I don't know if they would say exactly the same thing or not. But with me, sometimes it's brutal. I used to record my sermons myself. And come back to the building on Monday and listen and take notes. It got too hard. It really got kind of scary. But if I keep sounding like this, brethren aren't going to support me to keep doing what I want to do. I'm not aware of anything against myself. But you know what that says is, Paul says, I am examining myself. I am examining myself. Paul was very much concerned about conscience. You remember, as we get to the end of the book of Acts, two different times Paul will say something about his conscience. He says in chapter 23, brothers, I have lived my life before God in all good conscience up to this day. He says it again in another speech in Acts chapter 24 and verse 16. He says, so I always take pains to have a clear conscience toward both God and man. Now, there are those, you know, there are two of those three tribunals. That really, you have all three of the tribunals in chapter 24 and verse 16. I strive to always have a clear conscience, that's me, before God, that's the third one we'll talk about here in a second, and before man. They stand before the bar of self. They stand before the, you know, sometimes, I know this happens, maybe not here, maybe not you, but I know this happens sometimes that, you know, you didn't preach, you just sat and listened to the preaching. Your drive home is different with your wife or husband than the preacher's drive home with his wife. Your drive home is, can you believe he said that? Can you believe how long it took him to say that? Well, you know, what I want you to understand is that the preacher is having those exact same thoughts about himself. Thank you for serving me. By recovering my glass, the sermon might have been over, and maybe there are people, who are thinking, boy, I wish he'd left those glasses alone. Because the third bar is Christ. And this is the key. I mean, this is the most important one. Therefore, he says, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness and will disclose the purposes of the heart. Then each one will receive his commendation from God. Jesus reveals the hidden things. You know what's really frightening about preaching? And I think about what James said about not many becoming teachers. But you know what's really frightening about preaching, for me at least, I suspect this probably applies to these other men as well. What's really frightening about preaching is I might fool myself in thinking that my motives were what they ought to be. I might have fooled you into thinking about what my motives were when I said what I said, but I didn't fool Jesus. Jesus knows the hidden things. And I tell you, every word I type, and I have to type because I couldn't read my handwriting if I tried to bring that into the pulpit. Every word I type, there are gears turning in my mind thinking, I'm thinking about how are brethren going to respond when they hear that. But really what I'm thinking is, how's Jesus going to respond when he hears that? I worry considerably more about explaining what I believe and what I teach. And not only that, but I worry a lot about explaining why I teach what I teach to Jesus than I do about explaining it to people. With people, like Paul said, it's a small thing. It's a little thing. I have a lot harder time dealing with myself, but how incredibly awesome it is. Isn't it amazing how words change meaning? You know, the word awe did not originally mean, and it doesn't mean in either the Hebrew or the Greek, wow, that is so cool, that is great. The word awe means, I am terrified. I am filled with awe, and it is an awesome thing for any man to presume to occupy a position like this and to be speaking the mysteries of God, knowing that Jesus knows why I said what I said. He knows what my motives were. He knows whether or not those motives were pure. That is the most serious tribunal of all. And brethren, I think it's extremely important that you understand that. Those three things. That preachers who are worth their salt, as they used to say. Salt's pretty cheap now, but preachers who are worth their salt, they are concerned about what you think, but that's not their primary motivation. Preachers are wrestling with their conscience about why they say what they say and what needs to be said. Am I going to preach this even though it might cost me my support? Am I going to preach this even if they ask me to move on and go somewhere else? But ultimately, preachers who are worth listening to are the ones who are primarily concerned about standing before the tribunal of Christ, to whom we will all ultimately have to answer again, because he knows the hidden things. You don't know why I'm preaching this sermon tonight, although I'm confident that in your minds, some of you have been kind of speculating, you know, is there some reason that he's doing this? Wonder why he's doing that. I'm doing it because I'll share that with you. I'm doing it because I can. I'm doing it so Bob doesn't have to, honestly. I mean, I've been around. I've seen a few things. I know a few things. I'm doing it because I'm 67 years old, and I've been preaching for 41 years. So let's not be too hard on preachers. And you know, I know what you're thinking. Well, that's the lesson. We're done. But no, Paul's not finished yet. Two more things in the text. Or at least in these next few verses, there are two more things that Paul wants us to know about preachers. And the first one is this. Preachers are not to be elevated too highly. Sorry, Bob. Sorry, both Bobs. And Steve and Lewis and all of these other men. Sorry. I have applied all these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn by us not to go beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one against another. Now, what is he talking about? What is he talking about? He's talking about how people thought about preachers. Back in chapter 1, verses 12 and 13, well, I follow Paul. Well, that's nothing. I follow Peter. Well, I follow the eloquent one. I follow Apollos. Why is Paul writing this? Why does he tell us that preachers are servants? Why does he tell us that preachers are stewards? Why does he tell us that preachers stand before these three tribunals? What others think, what they think about themselves, and what Christ thinks, the ultimate tribunal. Why is he telling us that? I have applied all these things to myself and Apollos for your benefit, brothers, that you may learn by us not to go beyond what is written, that none of you may be puffed up in favor of one preacher against another preacher. I will tell you this. I have favorites among my idols of preachers, my beau ideals of preachers. I'm not going to name any names. But I also will tell you this, that I've never been to hear someone preach that I haven't gained something from. Even if they weren't one of those men who I especially enjoy sitting and listening to. And I'll also tell you this, the men who I might name, who I hold in maybe a little bit higher esteem than I should, maybe a little bit higher esteem, I will tell you this, none of them would be comfortable knowing that. Because they are all incredibly humble men and women. They would all say what Paul said. Who then is Apollos? Who's Paul? Well, remember what he said in chapter 4? We are just servants through whom you believe as the Lord assigned to each. And so Paul wanted us to understand that we need to be careful that we don't elevate preachers too highly. It's dangerous on a lot of different levels. It's dangerous for us. That's the point that Paul's making here. But let me tell you something. It's dangerous to the preacher too. If we pump the preacher up and make the preacher though feel as though he is special, that he is unique, that he is on some level, in some way, he is above all the rest of us, that is incredibly tempting. Everybody likes to be liked. I mean, everybody likes to be liked. But that wasn't one of Paul's qualifications for preachers. You've got to be a servant, and you've got to be a steward. You've got to be faithfully handling the mysteries of God. And I tell you what, if preachers get so caught up in, again, we said this a minute ago, but if preachers get so caught up in the accolades, the praises, and they start believing that, and they like that, and they want to keep hearing that, it's going to get hard when it comes time to say the hard things. It's going to be very difficult to do that and to be a faithful steward of the mysteries of God. I'm not suggesting that we can't follow preachers or have favorite preachers at all. Paul says, for example, I urge you then to be imitators of me. Though that almost sounds arrogant, does it not? I urge you to be imitators of me. And it is a little arrogant sounding until you connect it with what he says later in chapter 11 in verse 1. Here's what I meant by that, Paul said. Imitate me, but only insofar as I imitate Christ. But only insofar as I imitate Christ. So Paul wanted us to know that preachers are not to be elevated too highly. That's the first thing. And the final thing is this. Preachers should be willing to suffer. Read with me, if you will, if you have your New Testaments open. I didn't ask that the reading go this far, but I want to read verses 9 through 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 9 through 13. Here's what Paul says. For it seems to me that God has put us apostles on display at the end of the procession, like those condemned to die in the arena. We have been made a spectacle to the whole universe, to angels as well as to human beings. We are fools for Christ, but you are so wise in Christ. We are weak, but you are strong. We are honored. You are honored. We are dishonored. To this very hour, we go hungry and thirsty. We are in rags. We are brutally treated. We are homeless. We work hard with our own hands. When we are cursed, we bless. When we are persecuted, we endure it. When we are slandered, we answer kindly. We have become the scum of the earth, the garbage of the world, right up to this moment. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be preachers. And by the way, I have known men who either thought about becoming gospel preachers, but who decided eventually or ultimately not to do that because of this. And I have known men who started preaching who left the pulpit because they were mistreated, because they were abused, because they were called names. Do you understand that Paul is saying that is part of it? As a matter of fact, if you're not willing to suffer, then you're not worthy to preach. One of Hardiman's pieces of advice to young men who came to him and wanted to preach was, and you know, sometimes the conversation would turn to something like, you know, Hardiman would ask a question, why do you want to preach? Well, my daddy was a preacher, or I think it's a noble profession, or I want to serve people. And Hardiman's response was always something like this. Don't preach. Don't even think about preaching unless you can't help it. If you can do anything else, if you can see yourself doing anything else, do it. Don't preach. Well, that's hard advice to give to a young man, but I think it's valid. Why preach? Because I am compelled to preach. I have very few natural talents and abilities. Athletically, I have no stories to tell of heroic exploits on the court or on the field. I had an old Nike t-shirt for years. I wish I still had it. This Nike t-shirt said, the older I get, the better I was. And when I listen to some of you all tell your stories about touchdowns and game-winning baskets, I think about that shirt, yeah. The older I get, the better I was. But for some reason, God blessed me with a big, booming voice. That wasn't real helpful when I was sitting with the other kids at church. That wasn't very helpful in school. I have a whole stack of report cards that I need to destroy here pretty soon. All of which say, talks too much, too loud. And so I knew that about myself at a young age, that I have a voice. And so when it came time to decide what I wanted to do with myself, what I wanted to study, I had two options in my mind. I could study speech, or I could go into broadcasting. And so what I ended up doing at the University of Alabama is both. I took every broadcasting class that I could take. I took every speech class that I could take for 2.5 years. And I ended up with a degree from the University of Alabama in broadcast journalism, broadcasting. And I worked in radio. Clearly, I have a face for radio. I worked in TV. I was the sports guy sitting behind the desk telling you who beat who and when and why and how, and sitting there with a sports coat and a shirt and tie on and flip-flops and torn blue jeans underneath the desk. But, you know, I was that guy. And so I had all those hours in broadcasting, and I had all those hours in speech, and a gospel preacher pulled me aside. I'll never forget this, because when he did it, it made me angry. But I'll never forget this, because he said, Gary, God has blessed you with an incredible voice. I mean, you can be heard. Do you really think God gave you that voice to report sports scores? Or might there not be a better use of that voice? I get one consistent compliment every place I go to preach. And you know what it is? I could hear you. I turned my hearing aid off. I could still hear you. I don't know. Maybe I would have been, you know, Vin Scully. I had aspirations. I had dreams. But with Susan's help, lots of prayer, I finally decided that this gospel preacher was right. I need to focus this talent, this ability, into a way that would glorify God. And what that meant, because, you know, I knew, I wasn't the brightest bulb in the package. I knew that right from the very start. It's going to take a lot of studying. It's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of effort. It's going to take a lot of help. And I had a lot of help down through the years from so many different places. But I felt compelled to preach. And I know that that's the decision that Bob and Marlene have made. And I will tell you something, and this is one of the reasons that makes this hard for a preacher to say. But that's worth something, don't you think? Somebody who makes that decision, that I have talents and abilities that I could use in other ways, and I could make good money. But I'm going to devote my time and my energy and my attention to glorifying God, to serving God, to being a good steward of the mysteries of God. We owe them something for that. Even if we don't like what they say at any given time. Even if we don't like the way they say it. Let's respect them. Let's love men who preach the gospel for their works sake. Sometimes preachers know that they have to come. If you're going to do this work, you've got to come with what Paul calls a rod of discipline. And let me tell you something, brethren. Paul was ready to use it. He had it and he was ready to use it. If I need to, if I have to, I will come with the rod of discipline, but you would rather that I come in love with a gentle spirit. Every preacher I know would rather come in love and with a gentle spirit. But sometimes we have to come with a rod of discipline, and for that we might very well suffer. I suspect that there will be brethren who will have to stand before God, before that ultimate tribunal in final judgment. And God's going to ask, why did you treat preachers the way you treated preachers? Why did you treat that preacher the way you treated him? Who was just trying to be a servant among brethren. Who was just trying to be a steward of God's word. The role of preachers. Again, I know that sounds self-serving. I'm not apologizing for that. We have to preach the whole counsel of God. That's a part of the counsel of God, is what God's word says about preachers. When we find men who are servants and have servant hearts, and when we find men who are working as hard as they can to be faithful stewards of the mysteries of God, let's hold their hands up. Let's support them. Let's encourage them in this incredible work that they are doing to glorify and to honor God. If you're here and you're not a Christian, the invitation is for you. The invitation song will give you just a moment to think about your spiritual condition, to obey the gospel if that's what you need to do, to come back into a right relationship with God if that's what you need to do. But if you're here and you are in any way outside of Christ, outside of a relationship with God, then this is an opportunity for you to make that right. Come down to the front. Let us know how we can help or serve you. Do that right now while we stand and sing. We invite you to come.